Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
Freedom of Species would like to acknowledge the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, who are the traditional owners of the land on which we broadcast today. We pay our respect to the elders of all of the lands on which we meet across Australia.
Hello everyone and welcome to Freedom of Species on 3CR Community Radio, the show that brings animal advocacy to the airwaves. You just heard Sally Goldner with Out of the Pan talking to Ren Tumath, president of Casey and Cardinia Pride. And that song you just heard was I
Wish You Peace.
I Wish You Peace by the Eagles.
Yeah.
I'm Betty Mellon and I'm here in the studio today with Trev.
Hey everyone.
So it's almost Christmas in a few days. So happy holidays to all our listeners. Wishing you a cruelty-free Christmas. It's our last show, actually, before we get into the summer specials.
Summer programming, yeah. Which so I think we're going to have at least one live summer programming, are we?
Yeah, I think someone did say that they would do that from our team.
So you might get some surprises over the summer.
Yeah, so there's going to be different programming on at 3CR from the usual scheduled programming.
Yeah, but I think the our Freedom of Species time slot is going to have at least Freedom of Species hosts are going to be having content on this 1 till 2 slot on Sundays the whole way through until we're back in the studio.
Yeah, it's kind of our chance to like branch out and talk about something that's not directly animal related for once.
You hear a little bit more about what other things our hosts are interested in, or they might play some really pertinent replay or some other content that was really relevant. So yeah, hopefully it'll be pretty good.
Yeah, but we have got an animal rights themed show for you today as usual. So today we are talking about meat propaganda and sort of the ideology of non-veganism. So meat propaganda, I'm probably not the first one to think of this term, and maybe there's a more catchy term for it. But yeah, it's basically about information that we're sort of fed for our whole lives to make us think that we need to eat animal products.
Yep.
Or that, you know, animal products are very necessary to our lives.
And actually, which term do you think came first? Because I know people use the word vegan propaganda to try and like do the reverse. Like, do you think which term was used? Was it vegan propaganda and then we use meat propaganda? Or was it the other way around, you think?
Oh, just given that there's a lot more non-vegans, probably vegan propaganda was said first.
Yeah, I think so. So it's our retaliation back.
Yeah, sure. So I thought maybe before we get into it, because we're going to talk a little bit about non-veganism as an ideology as well, but I do maybe want to like go back to base and talk about like veganism 101, like what it actually is, what it means to us. Because I also feel like there's a bit of misconception about what veganism means.
Totally.
So one key point that I want to make, and this kind of confuses some people maybe, but being on a plant-based diet does not automatically make someone a vegan.
Yep.
And not everyone who is vegan is always going to be eating a fully plant-based diet.
Mm.
Definitely most vegans do. And like, I think all of us on the Freedom of Species team definitely do. But we recognize that we happen to live in an aggressively non-vegan world.
Yeah.
So there might be situations where someone is forced to eat animal products and they actually don't have a choice.
Yeah.
So like a few examples that come to mind is if somebody has to take a medication that contains an animal product, it wouldn't mean that they're not vegan or they can't be vegan just because of that. Also, if somebody doesn't have access to choices of food, like for example, if somebody is living under a military occupation and they don't have choices about what they eat, it wouldn't mean that that person is no longer vegan if they're forced to eat animal products in those kind of circumstances.
Yeah. Even people who are of a certain age who don't have full control over what meals they eat.
Yeah, if they're being like served by someone else.
At both ends of the spectrum, people who are very young or very old, sometimes they just don't have complete volition over what they can eat. They're told or forced, or they don't have the means to actually choose what they want to eat.
Yeah, definitely.
People with certain medical conditions, even outside of medications. There's things that, I guess, and this is something that you've said to me before, Betty, is that veganism, it's not what you do, it's the mindset, it's the ideology behind it.
So I consider veganism to be, it's not a lifestyle, it's a political stance.
Yeah.
So just like feminism is also a political stance, right? And you might have certain ways that you try to live in line with those values.
Yeah.
But it's not going to be 100% perfect. Like, there's no one who is like, you know, a perfect vegan. There are a lot of gray areas. And because we live in this non-vegan world, those are going to come up a lot.
And it doesn't mean that just because you can't do it perfect that you just don't care and that you just wouldn't even try. Like, obviously, you're going to try your best to live your life in alignment with those values and that, you know, political ideology of veganism. But it doesn't mean just because you can't get that perfect 100% level of lifestyle or all of your actions completely aligned, because as you say, we're in a non-vegan world, doesn't mean that that person stopped being vegan.
Yeah. Like,
every vegan tries to make as many vegan choices as they can.
Yeah, basically, of course.
At all times, but sometimes we can't for whatever reason it is.
So I thought it might be useful for me to just read out, I guess, what people consider the official definition of veganism that comes from the Vegan Society. So veganism is a philosophy and way of living which seeks to exclude, as far as possible and practicable, all forms of exploitation of and cruelty to animals for food, clothing, and any other purpose, and by extension, promotes the development and use of animal-free alternatives for the benefit of animals, humans, and the environment. In dietary terms, it denotes the practice of dispensing with all products derived wholly or partly from animals.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that possible and practicable part of the definition is very important to the disabled vegan community.
Mm.
Because what's possible and practicable for me might not be the same for everyone else.
Yeah.
Yeah. So as long as somebody sincerely believes in that goal of animal liberation and they're doing the best that they can in their circumstances to abstain from eating animal products, then they can call themselves vegan.
Yeah.
And so there's definitely gray areas of veganism, and we'll get into some of those. But also, like, where I personally draw the line here is if someone can choose to not consume animal products, but they do anyway, then that person is by definition not vegan.
Yeah.
So for example, if a person goes to a cafe and there's no vegan options on the menu, so they just eat animal products, then that's obviously not a vegan, because they weren't forced to eat at that cafe to survive.
Yeah.
And they made a choice there, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's why I say anyone can go vegan. Just like anyone can be a feminist, because it's simply a political stance that we strive to live in alignment with.
Yeah. And I think it's also worthwhile saying that not all vegans necessarily even share the same, or people who self-identify as vegans don't even share that same definition of vegan, or there might even be people who disagree. Or, I mean, personally, like, I think it's a pretty good definition, but I, like, you sort of said it afterwards, I wish that animal liberation was included in the definition, because to me, that's what veganism is. Veganism is the lifestyle or ideology that comes from wanting animal liberation.
Yeah.
And I wish that that was in the definition, because I feel like that would help solve a lot of these gray areas. When you look at things from an animal liberation lens, so it's like animals, what they're going through, what humans as a species are doing to animals, and what we can do to actually liberate them and stop oppressing them. When I look at things through that lens, it's like all the gray areas become a lot clearer. Well, most of them anyway.
Yeah, because I think maybe that definition puts too much focus on the individual. Mm. But it's actually not an individual personal choice, because it has implications that are bigger than yourself.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, so for the purpose of today's discussion, I also want us to understand veganism as a modern term that exists in the context of late stage capitalism and in a post-colonial world. Because, you know, there's been many people and societies throughout human history that would have practiced versions of what we might consider comparable to veganism. But on the other hand, people have consumed and used animal bodies in many different ways throughout history, all across the world, for a variety of reasons.
Yeah.
But we need to keep the conversation local and modern, because the vast majority of people living in Australian cities in 2025 are going to be consuming animal products coming from these big systems of industrialized animal agriculture and fisheries, which is, those are the systems that I would like to oppose the most.
Mm. And even if people don't get their actual like pieces of flesh directly from those places, like when you buy, when you go to a restaurant, when you go to a cafe, when you go, like, you don't know where the dairy milk's coming from. You don't know where, you know, when you buy some pastry thing from the supermarket, you don't know where the eggs came from in that pastry. Like, you know what I mean? Like, there's so many levels. When people think that they know where what they buy is coming from, it's normally only when they buy the exact item, not when they buy items that have that as an ingredient.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
And I think that's worth keeping in mind for people that think they know exactly where things are coming from. Because in our society and our, like, we don't even know where, like, when I buy even a vegan, something that's vegan, I don't know where the vegetables come from. I don't know where the fruit comes from.
Yeah.
It's not really labeled. It might say a certain percentage is Australian.
Yeah. That's about the most you get. But you wouldn't even know which ingredients.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I also want to kind of contrast us with carnivorous and omnivorous animals who are living within ecosystems and eating other animals as part of a food chain.
Mm.
And there maybe was a time where us humans maybe played this role in an ecosystem, but that is certainly not what we're doing in 2025.
100%, yeah.
Right, yeah. Okay, so for the next section, so now we maybe want to start getting a bit into the conversation about meat propaganda.
Well, were you still... Just for listeners, we're just sort of thinking of what was we were going to include. We had a few ideas of what to include in the show. Did you still want to go through a bit of what made us go vegan?
Maybe we'll get to that a bit later. I sort of want to talk a bit about what my mindset was like before I went vegan.
Mm,
but I think we might kind of flow into that like later in the discussion. Yeah. I want to say something that us vegans know all too well is that there's actually no essential nutrients present in animal products such as meat, dairy, and eggs that you can't get from a plant-based source. None at all. Not protein, not iron, not B12, not omega-3s. And, you know, we could go into detail about those nutrients maybe if we have time. But basically, the position of the World Health Organization is that a well-planned plant-based diet is suitable for all stages of life, including pregnancy and infancy.
Yeah.
Like, we know people who have had vegan pregnancies and, like, raised vegan children from birth.
Yes.
Yeah. I've been vegan for almost 10 years now, and I think you have as well.
Yep.
And I get my blood tested every 2 years, and since being vegan, I've never had a deficiency. In fact, what my doctor says is like, oh, wow, your cholesterol is really good for your age group. That's what my doctor says to me. And that's because plant-based foods don't have any cholesterol. You can only get that from animal products.
Yeah.
But our body makes our own cholesterol. We don't need to consume it from an external source. And in fact, consuming too much cholesterol can lead to heart disease over time and high blood pressure. And that, I believe, is the number one cause of death, at least in Western countries.
Mm.
So,
wow.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean, by the way, that vegan or people who eat a plant-based diet can just ignore cholesterol, because the body can generate more cholesterol than it needs depending on if you're eating a lot of bad foods such as saturated fats and things, but not eating the cholesterol directly helps. So it doesn't mean you got a free pass, just eat whatever you want and not have a cholesterol problem, but you're less likely to have a cholesterol problem because you're not eating it directly.
Yeah, and I think we should also mention that there's as many ways to be non-vegan as there is to be vegan.
Yeah.
There's plenty of vegans that eat an unhealthy vegan diet.
And no one cares if you're not vegan. Like, no one sort of analyzes your diet if you are not vegan.
Yeah.
So, oh, why are you eating that? Oh, where do you get your protein? Or where do you get whatever? Like, no one cares if you're eating a non-vegan diet.
Yeah.
It's only if you mention that you're vegan or plant-based.
Yeah. So I'm thinking maybe we should go to the first song now, actually, before we get that. We've got lots to talk about with meat propaganda.
Which one was first?
So I reckon we might play this 40-year-old vegan song by Chocles. This one is kind of about, I only heard this song recently, but it's about what vegans actually eat and some of the questions that vegans get asked about, like, what do you even eat? That sort of thing. So I thought this was pretty fun.
They think I'm starving, like I don't know what you eat. I beg your pardon, but I don't know what you mean.
Freedom of Species thanks Animal Free Science Advocacy for their financial support of this program. Animal Free Science Advocacy works to create a future where no animals are harmed in the name of science. And scientific progress is advanced through animal-free research methods. Become a member today by visiting animalfreesci.org.au. That's animalfreesci.org.au.
What's taking place in Palestine is horrendous.
Here are some ways that you can keep yourself informed and involved.
Listen in to Palestine Remembered every Saturday morning at 9:30 a.m. or listen to the podcast. Join the APAN mailing list at apan.org.au for updates, news about actions you can get involved in, and where you can donate to provide humanitarian assistance.
Listen to other news and current affairs programs on 3CR that also cover Palestine.
The oppression of the Palestinian people has been going on for 75 years. It has to stop. You can be part of making that happen by staying informed and active.
APAN is a proud supporter of 3CR.
Welcome back to Freedom of Species. You just heard the 40-year-old vegan by, what was the band name? Chocles.
Chocles. I'm not sure how to pronounce it, but for any keen Freedom of Species listeners, it's probably not the first time you've heard that song on the show.
Yeah, it's a classic probably.
I know Nick's played it before as well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, well, there's only so many like animal rights themed songs, so we might get a few repeats in there. Yeah. So we've just been talking about like meat propaganda. We sort of were talking about it as it relates to nutrition. And, you know, I'm kind of tempted to go through some of these main nutrients that people are often concerned about. But my main point is that people are so indoctrinated with meat propaganda that it's really hard for them to fathom that they don't actually need animal products or animal protein to be healthy and to eat delicious food. People seem to think that animal products have these magical health-giving powers, but they only think that because of meat propaganda.
Yeah.
So just as some examples that I often come across, if you go up to a random person and you ask them, what's a good source of calcium? Most people are going to say dairy.
Mm.
It's meat propaganda. And if you say, what about iron? They'll say red meat.
Yeah.
Meat propaganda again.
Yeah.
What about omega-3s? They'll tell you fish.
Yeah.
And it's meat propaganda. But instead of destroying the oceans, you could eat flaxseed, you know? Flaxseed's great.
Yeah. And I guess that's one thing we wanted to make sure people know is that when we're saying propaganda and we're talking about these, it doesn't mean that they're completely false. Like, things can be true, but not the complete truth. Like, for example, you know, these things that Betty just said, they are true. Like, you can get calcium from those things. You can get iron from those things. But it doesn't necessarily mean it's the best source, or it doesn't mean it's the – what's more important is it's not the only source or the main source, or it doesn't have to be. And but it's probably better for most people not for it to be their main source of those things.
Yeah. But I think the fact that people – default going to those ones is because we've been fed those messages our whole lives. That's what has
we've
been
led
us
to believe, that that's the main source that we should be focusing on for all of these nutrients, and that if we're doing anything else, it's just really minimal supplements to, you know, what you need to get from those animal sources.
Yeah. And the, you know, dairy and calcium thing, I'm sure the dairy industry has pushed that message a lot.
Yeah,
because they've got to justify their existence too. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. I just wanted to say one thing, because I was talking about fish, and I think sometimes people think that fish is somehow less destructive than other animal products.
Yeah.
But I would probably put the fishing industry on par with the beef industry in terms of how environmentally destructive it is, because, you know, it involves kind of like sweeping the ocean of all life. And there's a lot of like, you know, unintended catch. And
bycatch.
There's a lot of illegal fishing that happens as well, because it's extremely hard to police that, because the oceans are, you know, kind of the Wild West out there.
And there isn't even many regulations anyway.
Yeah.
Especially once they go into international waters.
So one of the biggest sources of plastic waste in the ocean is actually from fishing nets and discarded fishing gear. So that's an important thing to keep in mind too.
Yeah. It's pollution. It's also destruction of the environment. Hands-on way, like actually ripping up both living and non-living parts of the ocean and destroying it, and then also the follow-on effects of how that affects the ecosystem and so many different levels of what it does.
Another one that has been frustrating me a bit over time is things that people say about leather and like vegan alternatives to leather.
Yeah.
And The number of times I've heard people say, let's just call vegan leather what it is, plastic. And it's like, and people seem to think that leather, tanned leather, is biodegradable. It's not.
No.
It's absolutely not. No matter what tanning method is used, the whole point of tanning leather is that you're turning an organic substance into an inorganic substance.
Yeah, something that would naturally break down into something that's going to last forever. Like, people talk about preferring leather because they say it lasts so long. The only reason it lasts so long is because it can't break down. It's no longer...
Yeah, you can't have it both ways. Yeah. And also, I want to say not all vegan leather is created equal. So yeah, you can get like some cheap shoes from Kmart that just have this coating that kind of peels off and cracks. So that's kind of like low quality of like plastic shoes. But then like high quality vegan leather is, it's going to be, I'm not sure how it's made, to be honest, but it's going to be like one thing so it doesn't peel and crack.
Well, there's so many different ways that people, that different companies and different organizations are making these vegan alternative fabrics.
Yeah, there's a lot of cool technology around it.
There are so many. You can't just put them all in one basket and say they're all blah, blah. They're all plastic or they're all just fossil fuels or they're using more. Like, it just, it's not true, because when you actually do direct comparisons for the, they call it a life cycle analysis of a product. Mm-hmm. So it goes, well, what went into every part of the inputs before the product even was created. So it's like, for leather, you have to look at the cow's life. You have to look at the way that it was, like the different chemicals that are used in the tanning process and what happens and where that goes. And there's all these things about the environmental effects of the runoff of those really harsh chemicals from the tanning procedures of leather. And that's before it even gets on the shelf. And then you've got how long it lasts, and then what happens once it's no longer used, like once it's considered waste, how does that break down? How does it affect the environment? That's the full life cycle analysis of a product. So when you do that for leather versus these vegan alternatives, they're not, it's not like it's, you know, leather is the best, like not at all. Like some things, you know, they might, some things might be a closer race than others, but there are many vegan alternatives that are way less impactful on the environment when you look at the life cycle analysis.
Yeah.
It's only because people say buzzwords like it's plastic or it's just using fossil fuels. Well, fossil fuels are being used in everything that we do most of the time, especially when you look at a life cycle analysis, because it looks at how things are transported to where they have to go, how things are processed, what powers those things. Like, a lot of these, you know, factories aren't being run on green renewable energy. They're being run on coal power. So everything is affected. And it's only when you look at these specific highlighted examples, which I guess is what propaganda is, really. It's trying to falsely measure things on just one tiny item rather than looking at the whole picture.
Yeah. And you know what? Some people say that leather is a byproduct of the beef industry. It's actually not. Leather is the most, the hide is the most valuable part of the cow. So if anything, it's more like meat is a byproduct of the leather industry.
Yeah. Well, they go hand in hand, and they really, like, they help, just like one's not going to stop if the other stops, basically. Yeah. So if everyone went vegetarian, there would still be leather. And if everyone boycotted leather, there's still going to be meat.
Yeah. So I just wanted to say one example. You know the sinking of the Titanic?
Yeah.
Happened in 1912, which I think is about 115 years ago, something like that.
Wow.
You know what remains on the bottom of the ocean when so much else from the wreckage has broken down?
Would it be like the hull or something?
Oh, well, I mean that, yeah, the metal parts, but the leather shoes.
Oh,
the
wow.
leather shoes are just sitting there intact.
Wow.
And this is, you know, this is shoes that were made before 1912. So I don't think plastic existed yet. So they would have been using like the, I guess, older methods of tanning. And it's still not biodegradable, even even those really old shoes for over 100 years.
That's
still
incredible.
Sitting on the bottom of the ocean.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it really bothers me when people when people say that. Yeah. Another...
Oh, another meat propaganda one that we hadn't talked about but came to me is they're born to race. They love to race. Like people talking about horses or about greyhounds, like they have to race, they have to run. It's like, well, even if they do want to run or they have to run, do they need to be ridden or do they need to be forced?
In these circumstances,
yeah.
we know that horse racing is extremely, like there's a lot of casualties from the horses. So
I know
like,
they don't want to die when they just break a leg or something.
Yeah. Yeah. Another one I'm thinking of is sometimes I see people talk about, oh, you vegans think that you're so green, but think about, don't you know how much of the Amazon is getting cut down for your soybeans, for your soy milk and your tofu and stuff?
Mm.
And it is true that the Amazon is being cut down to grow soybeans, but only about 1% of them is actually for human consumption.
Mm.
The rest is animal feed for the beef industry again.
Yeah.
So that, you know, I think you were saying before, they're only telling part of the story there.
Yeah, they're partial truths. And they do that so that when people try to dispute it, they look it up and they look up just that single fact. It's like, oh, it's true. You know, people look up, what's the main reason for Amazon rainforest, you know, deforestation? And it can come up that, you know, planting soy is one of the main reasons.
Mm-hmm.
One of the other main reasons is beef farming, if you look it up, is actually clearing land for cow, you know, cow farming.
I think beef farming is the main reason, whether it's for their feed or for their pastures.
Exactly, yeah. When you combine both together for what the end result is for, it's going to be number one is for beef farming, 100%.
Yeah. Another thing I'm thinking of is, have you seen those farm to fork campaigns?
Yeah.
Where it's like, oh, look at these happy animals in the paddock. And now suddenly they're on your plate. Who knows what happened between?
Like, yeah, there's a few documentaries you can watch to find out the missing links in the middle.
Yeah.
Dominion is one, if you haven't heard. Earthlings is another.
Yeah, that missing link in the farm to fork.
Yeah.
Yeah, so if we can accept this reality that animal products are not actually necessary for humans to be healthy, then we can ask, what is the ideology of non-veganism in that case? And, you know, I think most people don't see non-veganism as being an ideology at all because it's the dominant and the default ideology. Like, it's just what most people do without thinking about it. And so I'm not saying that non-vegans are actively thinking this way, but this is the ideology of non-veganism. I kind of narrowed it down to 2 points, and that is an entitlement to use animal bodies for our own pleasure or as commodities, and the devaluing of an animal's life and agency. So when I wrote both these points down, I realized that that's basically the same ideology behind both patriarchy and white supremacy, right? Like this entitlement to exploit and commodify the bodies of women or racialized enslaved people, for example.
Yeah. Well, people even call sometimes like the non-vegan ideology, they call it human supremacy.
I've heard
that term as well.
It makes sense. Yeah. And I would say, so this modern system that we've placed farm animals in, and it is a modern system, like this kind of industrialized farming, it's really intensified in the last like 30 to 40 years. And I think one thing that really separates us from other, I guess, flesh-eating animals is the routine sexual violence that we perform on farmed animals in the name of breeding more animals.
Yeah.
And I sort of think that what we put them through is much worse than killing them.
Mm.
It's like this complete domination of their bodies and lives from conception to death.
Yeah.
And it's also the complete domination of the land and displacement of natural ecosystems with this artificial production line.
Yeah.
And that probably leads pretty well into the next point I have, so we've been just talking about misinformation that we often hear people repeat in our lives, but there's also been some pretty strong misinformation campaigns that originate from the meat and livestock industry, and they have a lot of connections to the far right.
Wow.
So what social media platform do you think is spreading most of this? I'll give you one guess.
Facebook?
No, X. But probably Facebook as well. But apparently it's really rampant on X slash Twitter. Of course,
especially because,
since
it's become X and the new owner has a lot less interest.
I've never been on Twitter, but I've heard it's pretty wild out there these days.
Yeah.
So a few things that come to mind is the carnivore diet that was spread by people like Jordan Peterson. And I first became aware of Joe Rogan because he was saying a lot of anti-vegan things. And I think he's also, I'm not sure if he's advocated for the carnivore diet, but he's definitely like a big meat guy.
Yeah.
And, you know, he has said a lot of bad things about vegans and stuff.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure, if I'm not mistaken, I think Miley Cyrus announced that she was no longer vegan on an episode of Joe Rogan.
Oh, was it?
Which is like, oh, come on. Like,
wow.
Yeah.
He would have loved that.
So I recently heard about this British far-right influencer who calls himself the Raw Egg Nationalist.
Oh.
And reading his Wikipedia page was quite a journey. he calls himself a, quote, masculinist health guru, and he believes that raw eggs are a superfood, especially for men. That's another thing I noticed with these guys. They seem to push that men and women, because they only would see, like, the gender binary like that, need to eat, like, vastly different diets.
Yeah.
Like, we're hardly the same species, it seems. Like, yeah. So he says that raw eggs are one of the most perfect natural foods in existence. And he has this cookbook called the Raw Egg Nationalism Cookbook, in which he advocates for consumption of 36 raw eggs a day.
A day?
Yeah. Ew. That sounds so gross.
36 a day. Jesus.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I quite enjoyed this one too. He says that plant-based diets are destroying Western civilization through what he calls soy globalism.
And that's not even like the first time I've heard that. Like, I've heard people say things like vegan burgers are destroying civilization or destroying social, like, you know, right-wing people have said, I really don't understand how they think that, you know, a different version of something you eat actually has such a huge impact on society.
You know what? Like, I think I do get it, because animal agriculture is about land occupation and they want to keep that going. So that's why they say it destroys Western civilization.
Yeah.
Because it's the way that we have, you know, animal agriculture has been a tool of colonization.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it makes sense that they would be against it. And just so you know, this guy isn't some, like, fringe person that nobody's heard of. He's actually followed by the US Vice President, JD Vance.
Holy shit.
So, yeah.
And he's in the UK?
He's British, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Probably won't talk about him too much more, but, like, his his Wikipedia page is just like, wow, okay, wow. I can't believe someone like this exists, but I guess I can believe it. That's the way the world is now.
Yeah.
Yeah, so now maybe I want to talk a little about some of the disinformation campaigns that were put up by the meat industry. And I saw a few of these. There's been this, I think she's a vegan journalist called Jessica Scott Reed, and she's written a few really good articles about this, which I will share in the show notes. And, you know, one of the, there's a few different angles they're going with it. Talking about meat as being natural as opposed to ultra-processed fake meats. Right. Like, they use that kind of wording.
Yeah.
I would really argue that there's nothing natural about the way that we're eating meat in modern times. Like, these are not naturally occurring animals.
No.
And they didn't die in natural ways, nor were they conceived in natural ways. Like, yeah.
And their whole life isn't even natural.
Yeah. Yeah, they're not a natural species even. Like, they've been bred from some wild animal genetically for bred. Our purposes.
Yeah.
I saw some ads. Some of them are saying that should fake meat have a cancer warning? You know, synthetic meat, that's another one.
Right.
It calls itself plant-based. So could cigarettes. Like, okay. Synthetic chicken, processed parts. Like, things like this I'm seeing. So kind of a lot of fear-mongering around it, like trying to make people think it's dangerous, like it's Frankenfood, I don't know, this kind of thing.
So it's like people are heavily invested in having some, you know, peace of mind coming from that they are doing the right thing by not being vegan. Like, they've got this, they feel this need, this desire to sort of put their mind at ease, or to that they're not doing something wrong by being not vegan. And I feel like that must be what causes this just huge desire to discredit and disinform and all of the propaganda that we're talking about. Like, I mean, because otherwise you can understand why the industries have a vested interest, but just the regular people, you know, just our family members who aren't vegan, our coworkers, our friends, our, like, for them to want to repeat and parrot this, like, what do you think makes people who aren't invested in the industry want to perpetuate this?
Because, yeah, I think it makes them feel better about not going vegan. So they sort of have to believe these things. And I would say, like, even if you're not vegan and even if you don't want to go vegan, don't do the propaganda for the meat industry.
Mm.
Come on. You should know better.
Yeah.
Yeah. Another angle of this meat propaganda is climate-friendly beef. So I think the beef industry is in a similar position to like the oil industries. And also like I even think the cigarette industry, when they first realized that cigarettes were like definitely really bad for people. And now they're kind of trying to put these information campaigns. How can we advertise this?
Yeah.
And so I've heard, have you heard them talk about regenerative beef farming?
I've heard those terms, yeah.
Yeah. So basically what they mean by that is they do this kind of like rotational grazing where they only graze the pasture to a certain point. So they're saying like there's more carbon sequestered in the soil, stored in the soil. So it's regenerative. But that really bothers me a lot because you know what stores a lot more carbon? Is the forest that you removed to put the beef farm there.
Yeah, exactly.
It would be way better if the forest was there instead of a regenerative beef farm.
Yeah. You know? And the other part is even if for some reason, like, you know, having cows on a pasture was the best thing for the environment, there's no way that it's better for the environment to then kill those animals in an abattoir and eat their bodies. Like, that does nothing to help the... Like, why would you have... And killing them at... Normally, what, 2 years of age, 4 years of age?
I think it's probably two for like beef cows.
But they normally would live to be well over 10 years old. I think the average would be around 20 from animals in sanctuaries. So you're drastically cutting these lives short of what apparently supposed to be helping you create better environmental carbon sequestration for the environment, but you're killing them every 2 years.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like in countries... This doesn't include Australia, but countries that have like wild bovines, I guess. It's like, couldn't you just let them live on the grasslands in an ecosystem if this is so good for the planet? But it's like, that's not really what it's about. No. You just want to make money from the beef industry.
Yeah. And the other drastic measure that they're bringing in is apparently they're going to feed, or a lot of different farms are going to try feeding these cows algae and seaweed to try and reduce the methane emissions from their farts and burping.
Oh, yeah, I mean, it's just not going to make enough of a difference to be worth it, I think.
Well, like, especially compared to, as you say, the best use of that land is forestation.
Yeah.
Like actual forest, like letting it rewild and become a natural carbon sink.
Yeah.
Holding a lot more carbon than any other way that you can process the land.
Yeah. So I just wanted to read out one quote from one of these articles by Jessica Scott Reid. A landmark study from 2018 in the peer-reviewed journal Science found that for every kilogram of beef consumed, an average of 99.5 kilograms of CO2 is added to the environment.
Yeah.
It was the most climate-damaging food studied, and the competition wasn't even close.
Yeah.
That's what it says. And then it goes on to compare that pork and chicken are less environmentally destructive, like they've got less methane emissions, but... The reason why is because those ones are the most intensive.
Yeah.
And I would argue the most cruel.
Definitely.
Like, I think when you think about the worst examples of factory farming, I would usually be thinking about pig farming and chicken farming.
Yeah.
Yeah. So...
Because they're the most high density intensive and they're the most restrictive in what they... For allowing movement, for allowing freedom, for allowing all those sorts of things.
Yeah.
And it becomes just that give and take. It's like you can have... Really good for the environment, but really cruel to the animals.
It's never going to be really good for the environment, though. True. Just better than
be
beef.
Better for the environment, but way worse for the cruelty of animals.
Yeah.
Or the opposite. It can be better for the welfare of animals, or not as cruel for the welfare of animals, but a lot worse on the environment.
Yeah. And you know what? That's kind of one of the things that really made me go vegan, because I cared about my environmental impact. But when I realized, so sometimes they talk about grass-fed beef as being better. Grass-fed beef actually releases the most methane, more so than grain-fed beef.
Yeah.
And when I realized that, I sort of understood that if I'm trying to eat like more climate-friendly meat, I'm going to be eating from like cruelest farms, the most intensive farms.
Yeah.
And I think with chickens, I just want to mention, I find the breeding of meat chickens in particular to be like the most dystopian. Like what we have done to these birds is crazy. Like they can't live alone and they can't have very long lives because of what we've done to them. Yeah. I think chickens get slaughtered at about 8 weeks. It's super young.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Also this messaging of meat feeds the world, but that's actually the opposite of true as well, because it actually contributes to world hunger due to very inefficient use of land.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So we might go on to the next song now, another break. So the next one that we're going to play, I actually recently found out that Prince was a pretty staunch vegan. Oh, sorry. No. We're going to play that one later. He is. Which is cool, but we'll get back to that.
Yeah.
So the next one's, it's actually more about climate change stuff. This is a Billie Eilish song, and it's called All the Good Girls Go to Hell.
Freedom of Species would like to thank Project Fresh Start for their financial support of this program. Project Fresh Start provides free plant-based food to the community, with a focus on providing healthy, fresh plant-based food and education around healthy eating and living in a way that sustains the individual, the community, the animals, and the planet. To find out more about our community lunches and programs, check out projectfreshstart.org.au.
Did you know that Western Sahara is Africa's last colony? The issue of Western Sahara was raised in the Eddie Mabo case referencing Terra Nullius. Western Sahara is illegally occupied by Morocco. Indigenous Sahrawis are denied their right to self-determination. France continues to veto United Nations human rights observation in Western Sahara. Sahrawi people are being killed by Israeli drones. Like to learn more? Become informed. Become an Australia Western Sahara Association member at awsa.org.au. Australian Western Sahara Association is a 3CR supporter.
Welcome back to Freedom of Species on 3CR Community Radio. You just heard All the Good Girls Go to Hell by Billie Eilish, and I'm here with Trev today. We've been talking about meat propaganda and, you know, some of the reasons why people don't go vegan.
Yeah.
And that sort of thing. So I guess we wanted to maybe try and end on a slightly more positive note, because every now and then you hear about ex-vegans, and I feel like they get a lot of attention for being ex-vegans, and it's maybe like very validating to non-vegans.
Mm.
But yeah, me and Trevor both vegan for almost 10 years.
Yeah.
And we're still going strong, you know?
Yep.
Like, I'm not planning to stop anytime soon. You know, quite a lot of my friends are in the same boat, have been vegan for years and years. And so maybe we want to talk a little bit about why people don't stay vegan as well.
Yeah.
I think that, like, there's no social pressure to be vegan, really, because there's so few of us.
Yeah, it hasn't really hit that critical mass stage where there's a rolling sort of pressure yet. Like, there's pressure on people to take sides on, you know, equal marriage. There's pressure on people to take sides on, you know, other issues that have really become like front and center in certain parts of our politics and our lives. But yeah, animal ethics hasn't quite hit that level.
I think part of the reason is because we're not really in community with farmed animals like the way we are with, you know, marginalized humans.
Yeah.
Like, it's sort of hard to exist around women if you're not going to be pro-feminist or something, yeah, exactly. You know.
It's hard to escape the consequences of your actions when you're anti-feminist, or if you're anti-trans, or if you're, you know, anti disability, things like that. But if you're just anti-animals, there's no,
you're not
going to
get a dairy cow calling you out on your behavior.
Exactly.
Yeah,
unfortunately. It would be good if you did.
Yeah, I've also got another reason, is that I think that people don't want to be different, because I think with being a vegan, you do, like, part of that, unfortunately, is that you have to kind of be prepared to stand up for yourself and your principles.
Yeah.
Because it comes up all the time, even if you don't want it to.
Yeah.
And you just have to be ready for it.
Yeah.
And I do think some people find that really hard.
They do. And I think especially if they don't have friends or family that are already vegan or plant-based to sort of support them. If they're the instigator in their social circle and they're the first sort of person to want to try this change, that can be really tough. If they're not the sort of person that wants to be that outspoken, if they just want to be the person that's quietly doing their own thing because they think it's the right thing to do, but that means every mealtime or every time they go out with people, it gets brought up, and they're not even trying to bring it up. It's just gets thrust upon them.
Yeah, people will bring it up. And when I think back to my younger years when I wasn't vegan yet, I do think that was part of the reason as well that stopped me from going vegan, is I didn't want to be like, you know, for example, when I was still at school, Actually, I didn't really know about veganism then, but I didn't want to be the only vegetarian in my class, yeah. for example.
You didn't want to be difficult.
Yeah, and I didn't want to be different. And I, yeah. But I think as I got older, like, that started to not matter to me much. Like, my principles mattered to me more.
Yeah.
And also, like, I don't know about you, but I'm very stubborn. So, like, I'm not going to stop being vegan. I'm just not going to stop.
Well, I'm quite a stubborn person too, but I'll just have a quick little story about, because, so we're talking about what either, you know, made us stay vegan to try yeah. and sort of put a positive spin on it. And I'll quickly say, I have to start by looking at why I went vegan. And I first went vegetarian. I was a really slow change to go towards veganism. And when I was vegetarian, I was still pretty, like, I'm a stubborn sort of person. Like, when I do something, I tend to do it like 100% and just see how I go. And almost yeah. like an experiment, a test to myself. So it's pretty easy for me to do those things. And so when I finally went vegetarian, I really did it. I was proper vegetarian. But it was only a couple of years later that someone offered me some animal flesh to eat. And I thought to myself, this is from a vegetarian mindset. I was, yeah, I used to eat that all the time. I wonder how it would feel now that I've been away for a year or two from eating that. And I had it and it was terrible, but I didn't think it was wrong to do that.
Yeah.
My mindset was that's okay to just sort of try that. Whereas now, being actually vegan and looking at it through an animal liberation lens rather than just a diet, there's no way in hell I would do that.
Like, you stop even seeing it as food.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so I'm lucky that I had a bad experience, I think. Like, I had a bit of chicken flesh that someone offered me and it just didn't – it was like something clicked in my head. I guess from not having it for so long, it just felt so wrong to eat, like, a dead body. And that was one of the things that helped push me towards being vegan a couple of years later. But the reason I've stayed vegan is because I'm not doing it for health reasons and because I'm not doing it for environment reasons. Because looking back, I feel like if I was doing it for those reasons aren't strong enough to actually hold my conviction 100%. The reason I'm still vegan is because I saw that it was about animal liberation. And that didn't happen until about 2 years after I started calling myself vegan. So I was calling myself vegan when I was plant-based and when I was freegan and all these other sort of variations of, but I didn't actually reject the commodification of animals until January 2016. And I had a actual experience, which was the last time I did consciously do it. And so, and that was after I was even involved in activism and things like that.
Wow, yeah. Yeah, and I think veganism is quite radical in that way, actually, because every time you sit down to eat with people, you remind them that it's unnecessary to eat animals and that there is another option. And it puts that issue on the table all the time. It's kind of like you're doing a mini activism, like, every time you eat with people in a way. Yeah. I just want to say my favorite thing about being vegan is that I get to live in reality. Like, I get to actually love animals with my full chest, like, knowing that I'm not participating in their mass torture. I don't have to do this, like, mental gymnastics to convince myself that what we're doing is somehow justifiable because I just know that it's not.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd heard someone use the term mass dissociation, talking about, like, the way that everybody kind of just shuts off their brain for this particular issue.
Yeah.
I feel like otherwise deep thinking people for some reason just switch off their brain to this issue.
Yeah, it's related to cognitive dissonance as well, like sort of avoiding that cognitive dissonance that will kick in if you sort of let yourself think about that for too long.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, any last points before we're coming close to the end of the show now?
I remember one thing you asked me at the start of when we were planning this show is, would anything make me not be vegan? And I really can't think of a reason why I would stop being vegan for
would
my
anything
life.
Stop me from being a feminist? No.
Yeah.
So, like, no, this is my politics now.
That's it.
Like, that's not to say there could be a situation where I'd be forced to eat animal products, but as we went over at the start, that wouldn't make me not vegan.
Exactly. And if I use my personal preferred definition of veganism to be just wanting animal liberation as the short version, I feel like that encompasses
everything.
Are you
ever not going to want that? Yeah.
Exactly. I can't see a reason why I would ever want to all of a sudden want a terrible life for animals.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't see, like, sometimes with leftists that aren't vegan, I kind of wonder, but, like, what is your liberatory vision then? Does it include these animal agriculture systems? Because, again, I don't actually see how we can all be liberated if we're not also liberating these farmed animals.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So just about
is
at
that
the
positive
end,
enough to finish on?
Hopefully. Yeah, hopefully. Yeah, this was like a good show to just get out some stuff that's been like swirling around my head for a little while. Yeah.
And it's probably going to be relevant to a lot of people over holidays and Christmas, like meeting up with friends and family, and they're going to be, I'm sure a lot of these things are going to be talking points, as they always are.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's sort of a time where a lot of vegans would be forced to be around animal products when they wouldn't want to be.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I guess we'll finish by saying Merry Christmas and Happy New Year from us.
Yeah.
I'm going to be away for most of January, so I'll be back at some point in February.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But keep listening to 3CR. As we said, the summer program is going to go through until we're back in January. And obviously after us is Rotations this week at 2 p.m. So stick around and listen to them. But what's the last song you mentioned earlier?
Yeah. So this song is a Prince song. And I found out from the lyrics of this song that I think Prince was a pretty staunch vegan, actually.
He was, yeah.
He talks about, leave your brothers and sisters in the sea, and we're all part of the animal kingdom and stuff. So this is Animal Kingdom by Prince.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.